This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Darshan Johan alongside Julia Jacobs and Hezrel Ashraf. So today we'll be talking about the experience of COVID-19 patients in home isolation and how anyone who ends up COVID-19 positive and isolating at home can take care of themselves, because we've seen an increasing surge in COVID-19 cases and our healthcare system faces unprecedented strains with hospital beds, ICUs and quarantine centers filling up fast, and more frequent delays in transporting COVID-19 patients in hospitals. The Health Ministry has started instructing low-risk patients to isolate at home. So we'll be speaking to a COVID-19 patient who self-isolated to understand her experience, and then with Dr. Helmi Haja Maidin, consultant respiratory physician, on how patients isolating at home can best navigate this new health measure.
Yep, and on that note, we've got a Twitter poll running on our Twitter page asking you if you'd feel comfortable isolating at home if you ever end up COVID-19 positive. Your choices are yes, with proper support; no, admit me to hospital; or C, unsure, need more info. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio and WhatsApp, and send a message to WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Right. So on that note, the past few weeks have been especially worrying, to say the least, right, in the battle against COVID-19. Since early December, we've seen new COVID-19 positive cases in the country hit four digits a day, exceeding 1,000 cases every day since early December. And since January 15, we've seen the number of new cases staying above the 3,000 mark. And we saw the highest number of cases on January 16 with 4,029 cases.
Yes, that's right. And in light of these sustained spikes, the health DG, Tan Sri Dr. Noor Hisham Abdullah, recently announced that, and I'm quoting here, "our health system has been pressured and we are at breaking point." Mm. And he was, of course, referring to the number of beds that are rapidly being taken up in public hospitals. Now, the Health DG hasn't actually provided the latest figures on exactly how many beds across the country are occupied. But just to put it into perspective, data from the Health Ministry's Crisis Preparedness and Response Centre, or CPRC, this is from earlier this week, and that showed that hospitals in 10 states are running low on ICU beds. And this includes states like Selangor, Johor and Malacca. And in each of these states, more than 70% of the ICU beds have been occupied, which is very telling in terms of the numbers of severe COVID-19 cases that have, dramatically risen. Hmm.
That's right. And according to the CPRC, the number of patients facing severe symptoms, or Category 4 and 5 patients, has nearly doubled in the first half of January alone. I mean, as far as of January 4th, they made up 9% of all cases. But by January 19th, they made up 15% of all cases. Now, you compare this to just 3% at the height of the second wave last year around November. And as a result, the number of deaths has also spiked. And comparing it to last year, the situation is getting worse very quickly. I mean, the first 9 months of 2020 recorded less than 100 deaths cumulatively. But in the first 15 days of 2021 alone, there have been already 115 deaths. And if drastic measures aren't taken, the Health Ministry projects that that figure to rise to 280 deaths by the end of January.
Yeah, so I know we went through a lot of figures and stats, right? But these numbers really reflect the increasingly bleak realities on the ground. And as daily cases go up and more beds are being occupied, there have been more delays in transporting COVID-19 patients to hospitals as health workers and resources become more stretched. Some patients in the Klang Valley, for instance, I've read articles that report that it's taken several days from the time they tested positive for an ambulance to transfer them to hospitals like Sungai Buloh for treatment. And one such experience was reported by a PJ resident, Miss Young, regarding her parents. And we're actually going to speak with Miss Young later on. On a related note, though, some COVID-19 patients who spoke with Malaysia Kini even reported that their district health office only contacted them to conduct contact tracing after they had recovered. I mean, that's just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. In light of this unprecedented strain on our healthcare system, the Health DG has started advising positive patients who are asymptomatic or who have mild symptoms to isolate at home first, as they may face delays in being admitted to a ward. And he said this back in December of last year.
Yes, and but last week, though, Health Minister Dato' Sri Dr. Adam Baba announced that patients who are asymptomatic or show mild symptoms would have to isolate and recover at home for at least 10 days while being remotely monitored by health workers. However, if patients live in a household with, you know, with others and the size of the house is too small, then they may be transferred to a hospital.
Yeah, and while home isolation is a new measure that Malaysia has adopted to help tackle the pandemic, other countries have actually already been implementing this for a few months now, especially those whose healthcare systems are overwhelmed. So just take the US, for example, where nearly 25 million people have been infected and hospitals are just, you know, overwhelmed with COVID patients. So much so that 20% of hospitals have reported an ICU occupancy rate of at least, get this, 95%.
Wow, that's so high. Yeah.
And I remember reading about people isolating themselves in their basements, you know, just to separate themselves from family members. And in many cases, people had no choice but to cope with the virus at home.
Yeah. So as cases here in Malaysia continue to surge, and given that more asymptomatic and low-risk COVID-19 patients will likely self-isolate in their homes, we thought we'd speak to someone who tested positive for COVID-19 and self-isolated at home. So to share her experience having done just that after testing positive for COVID-19, we've got Ms. Yong, a PJ resident on the line. Ms. Yong, thanks so much for joining us today. So take us back to the beginning. I mean, from the moments leading up to you contracting COVID-19, why did you decide to take COVID-19 tests in the first place?
So we actually had a family meeting. What happened was my dad was coughing directly after he coughed. It was like less than an hour, everybody started coughing, plus his son and everybody, plus his wife too. So what happened was my body was aching so badly, so I went for my physio the next day. And normally after physio, you should feel better, but I felt worse. It was like three times the ache. I got back around 3 o'clock from Setia Wangsa, went to GP. Then my GP said I had slight fever. The doctor was telling me, oh, it's all right. Maybe, you know, something mild or something like that. The next day, when things start getting worse, I said, okay, that's it. Just Jalan University, there's a drive-in. I said, maybe I take the COVID test and see what's going on. So that's how I found out that I was actually positive the next day. Dad got tested positive, so does my son. Then my two girls were tested, one positive, one negative, and my mother-in-law was tested positive.
Right. And Ms. Yong, what happened after you tested positive? You know, we understand that you live with family members, right? Like you mentioned just now, did you reach out to a hospital to request to get admitted, or, you know, did medical staff reach out to you?
We didn't request anything. But then when my dad started to get bad on the second day, he started blurred out, started having diarrhea, and then when you call him, he didn't respond to you. That's when we started to have a little bit of panic. So I called up UH for help. They said, you can only come with our ambulance or any ambulance, then we will accept you. I said, I'm only staying in Section 12. Why can't I drive in and just put my parents for checkup, you know, and can someone help? Because I can't carry my dad. And he can't seem to get up from bed. So I call YB, Rajiv. Mm-hmm. So YB called UM and he said, okay, they said they will be coming at night around 9. Please wait out for them. Nobody came and that got worse. So what I did was I called the private ambulance. Then he was like, but private ambulance, we have to pay. I said, we have no choice. They need an ambulance to get dad and mom to the hospital. Ambulance it shall be. Then Dr. Lung was very helpful. He called 999. Then he coordinate among us. Then he told the hospital what's the symptom. Then he sent his medical team over. When they look at my dad, they said, okay, that's it. We are going to take him because he's level 3 already. It means he's not listening. He's not responding to any of us. So we need to take that. Mom has diabetic, has high blood pressure. So that's how at the end we got the two old folks to Sungai Buloh. So we paid 1K each.
Right. But how did you end up, self-isolating at home? Were you instructed to do so?
All right. Now, I called my sejahtera, okay, to change my portfolio from COVID low to maybe COVID-19. I can't find through the apps and through their website. It doesn't seem like they have this. Then I said, oh, then how am I going to tell them that I'm positive? And how am I going to tell them who else is with me? The apps is really just a bare minimum, you know. It doesn't have anything that could help anybody to know whether where you are within the 24 hours, 48 hours and all that. Then nobody told me to self-isolate, okay? Because I begged the hospital to take my parents. I said, look, you just take the bad one and go to the hospital. You let us stay back if you do not have any more hospital bed. Because with my condition, actually, I was supposed to be in the hospital. Because I was having very bad diarrhea. I was going to the loo for like 15 times a day. But still, I stayed back because they said they do not have any more beds. So I said, it's okay. And I have 3 kids at home, which is 21, 17 and 16. I said, I don't want to leave them alone at home. At the end, I said, okay, that's it. You take the old folks. You leave us at home. We will take care of ourselves. But they also never reach out to say what type of medicine you should take. And being as paranoid, I have 10 boxes of Panadol, six bottles of these cough syrup, you know, which I bought from pharmacy before this. I just don't know. Instinctively, I just bought all these things. So my house looks like a pharmacy at the end of the day.
That's really a lot that you've been through, Ms. Yong. How are you feeling right now and how have you been coping?
How do I feel right now? The cough is still irritating. It's like a yo-yo thing, on and off thing. The body ache also. But otherwise, everybody is fine. My children and basically myself, we feel tired most of the time. So doing a little bit of things, then after that, especially my son, after mopping half of the living hall, he will go and sleep. So sort of like you get tired very easily. Then my daughter lose her taste buds. So you can't say in front of her. She said, you guys are irritating me. Then I have one which is asymptomatic. Yeah, asymptomatic. As of today, from 31st, 21 days, we have been in the house. And today at 3 o'clock, we were supposed to go to Kelana Jaya to get surat pelepasan, certificate to be released to the public.
And Ms. Yong, what measures do you hope the government will take to address delays in transferring patients to the hospital?
Imagine yesterday, I was so tired because I spoke to almost 8 KKM people telling the same thing. I should have recorded like what you are doing to me right now. So pass it to them, you know. So these are the things. The system is not there. So the day you can't get data by not doing your system well. So I wish that they spend in this information technology, upgrade their system into a better accessible system, you know. And another thing that I'm very amazed was all of us went for the COVID test, but only one person appeared in the system, which was my son.
Oh dear.
Whereas he and my father-in-law went together and I went earlier on, but we didn't appear in the system except for him. And because of him, they called us. I don't know. That's why when you ask me how I feel, I really do not know how to feel.
Thanks so much for speaking with us, Ms. Yong. I mean, we wish you the best, and you know, we hope that you stay safe. That was Ms. Yong, a resident in PJ who's tested positive for COVID-19 and who has gone through self-isolation at home.
Yes, so we're going to go for a quick break now, but we'll come back and we're going to chat with Dr. Helmi Haja Maidin, a consultant respiratory physician, about how COVID-19 positive patients who are isolating at home can take care of themselves and monitor their symptoms. You can send us your thoughts by tweeting at us at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. You're tuned into the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to the Daily Digest. I'm Darshan Johan, alongside me, Julia Jacobs and Hezril Ashraf. So we are discussing how asymptomatic and low-risk COVID-19 patients are going through home isolation, given the strain on our healthcare system amid a surge in new daily cases. Before the break, we spoke with Ms. Yong, a PJ resident who tested positive for COVID-19, about her experiences in self-isolation at home.
Yep, and in the meantime, we've been asking you on our Twitter poll, you know, would you feel comfortable isolating at home if you ever tested positive for COVID-19. Your choices are yes, with proper support, no, admit me to hospital, and unsure, need more info. You can also send us a tweet at BFM Radio or send us a message on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899.
That's right. So we spoke to Ms. Yong earlier, but now we want to hear from Dr. Helmi Haja Maidin, who is a consultant respiratory physician, about ways people can navigate self-isolation at home if they end up testing positive for COVID-19 and are considered asymptomatic or have mild symptoms. So welcome, Dr. Helmi. Thanks so much for joining us today. So, you know, there have been reports by COVID-positive patients that they face delays in being transported to the hospital. And in some cases, the MOH doesn't respond to them for days at a time after patients request to be transported to a hospital. So what does this say about the current state of our health system?
I think the DG, Tan Sri Noor Hisham, has mentioned a couple of times how there's a lot of stress on the system at the moment. And this is not just in terms of hospital beds or ICU beds, but also further down in the community. So there are issues we are facing right now in terms of getting people connected at the right time. I think, like you described, sometimes there's a delay when it comes to contacting the PKD or the local public health officers. And all this is an indication of the unfortunate increase of the cases. Now, the cases themselves, as we know, are similar in the sense that we're not seeing an increase in mortality rate. We're not seeing an increase in how bad patients are. But when you have a sheer increase in volume, then things get overwhelmed. No matter how good your system is, if it is unable to cope with a certain volume, we're going to start struggling. And this is what we're seeing. And this is why having a circuit breaker or some form of lockdown is important so that we can catch our breath.
Right. So given the situation, the MOH has instructed certain patients to isolate at home. Do you think that given the situation, this is considered an appropriate response to dealing with the situation?
With the right patient, it is. We have moved away from slightly less than a year ago, where the goal was to eliminate cases in the community, to wanting to mitigate cases in the community. I think we can quite safely say that we do not harbor any ambition of getting cases down to zero. Once again, it's about getting it to a point where it's controllable. Now, what causes more stress on a healthcare system is having too many patients in hospital. Now, if they need to be in hospital where they do need very frequent monitoring or they need to be looked after by a nurse or a doctor, then it would be appropriate. But if similar numbers of patients can be put out in the community where they can be cared for at home, then of course that would be appropriate as well. And what many countries have done and what we've seen globally is that those patients who are deemed to be in category 1 or 2 do very well at home, granted that they do self-quarantine or self-isolate appropriately, and they also take into account the potential red flag symptoms or worrying symptoms that they need to be wary of in order to get the treatment that they need, if they need to.
And doctor, how do patients go about determining if they should be isolating at home or get transferred to a hospital?
So I mentioned category 1 and 2, and perhaps it would be worth explaining what they mean. And in the context of COVID-19, in this particular disease, category 1 is basically having no symptoms. So you have a positive test, but you feel fine. So essentially, you don't have any symptoms at all. Category 2 would be your flu-like symptoms or symptoms that you tend to associate more with the cold sometimes. So your cough, a bit of tiredness, loss of smell, a bit of a sore throat or a headache, some body aches, but nothing that affects your breathing. Category 3, and this is where you start to see people who do need to be monitored closely in hospital, are those who have had a chest x-ray and have had evidence of pneumonia on the chest x-ray. And then category 4 is when you need oxygen to help breathe. And category 5 is when things are really dire and you do need, in most cases, ICU level support. So if you are diagnosed with a case, normally the procedure should be that you get in touch or you are put in touch with a public health official who would then help advise you with regards to whether or not you are someone who is safe to go home for home quarantine. If it's not the public health, it could be the GP or the hospital doctor who has diagnosed you as well. And these are so it would be a combination of knowing for yourself what the criteria are, but also discussing this with the healthcare professional so that you get that extra reassurance that you're doing the right thing.
Right then. So for patients isolating at home, how do they go about monitoring their symptoms and conditions? And if they live with others who may not be positive in a household, how should they navigate the situation?
Now, you want to be sure that if there's any red flag symptoms, then you get help quickly, so sooner rather than later. And the key thing would be to look for things like difficulty breathing or some form of chest tightness, especially if you're exerting yourself. So if you're indoors, you're doing your normal housework, for example, you're going up the stairs at a normal pace, and you find that actually things are not as easy as before. You're more tired. The breathing is not as comfortable as it was. Then that would be a sign to seek help. Then in some cases, you may have people who have nausea, vomiting, who are not able to get enough food or drink in. So if that is an issue, then that is also something to look for as a red flag symptom. And of course, if you're generally more unwell, so things like being more, getting a little bit lower in terms of your level of consciousness, a reduction in your ability to pass urine, worsening lethargy, these are things that would necessitate extra help. Now, I say category 1, category 2, but one thing to also bear in mind is that there are some people who have higher levels of risk, and these would be people who are elderly and also those who have got certain comorbidities. So what we know from studies is that those who have a background of renal failure, of diabetes, of heart failure, and those who are obese as well, they are at a higher risk. So for these people, you would have a slightly lower tolerance when it comes to wanting to get them admitted to hospital for higher levels of monitoring. Ultimately, your goal is to minimize contact with others so you don't pass it on to others. So if you have the space, if you're fortunate enough to be isolated physically, then your own room, your own bathroom, preferably one that's ensuite, that would be ideal. You'd want to be in a place where there's good ventilation so that things do not remain stagnant indoors. And you'd want to minimize contact with people, not just those who are visiting. In fact, you shouldn't have any visitors, but people who are in the family as well. So with that in mind, you should get people to deliver food, ideally leave it outside the door so that you take it. If you don't have an ensuite, then maybe you need to go to a bathroom, but then wipe it down, clean it properly with the right form of detergents or alcohol-based solvents to clean things up. And you should always wear a mask. The thing that we have to always remind ourselves is the mask that we wear in the community is to stop us from passing germs on to others. So that's very, very important. And it's particularly important if you're stuck indoors with others who may not be positive, although you are.
And are there reliable and verified resources that they can access to help them out?
There's just so many out there, right? And the ones that I always go to or I recommend patients or friends to go to is those that are very much verifiable. So things that originate from Ministry of Health portal. So our KKM, our Ministry of Health, does have a website that talks a lot about COVID-19 in terms of symptoms and what to do in not just English, but in Bahasa as well. And My Sejahtera also has a lot of information in it when it comes to how to monitor yourself, how to actually seek help, what all those red flag symptoms that I mentioned is all in My Sejahtera as well. And I think we need to start perhaps utilizing it more. We tend to use it to check in, but it's also a very useful source when it comes to information that's updated and verified. So you know that's coming from a source that is based on actual data and actual medicine.
And, you know, you touched on this slightly just a little bit earlier, but maybe we can get into it in more detail. At what point do patients who are already at home need to be transferred to the hospital, and how can they reach out for assistance?
I would go back to the various signs or symptoms that I mentioned earlier when it comes to those red flag symptoms, particularly the increased level of tightness, the inability to take in anything oral or anything fluid, and last but definitely not least, any indication that the breathing is affected. So feeling more tired, feeling more breathless, those would be very key indicators. Once again, these things are also in My Sejahtera. There is, I can't remember which page exactly, but there is a component to it where it gives you all these tips on when you would need extra help. You can actually ask for help through My Sejahtera. You can get help through your PKD, the Pejabat Kesihatan Daerah, because if you have been told to isolate, you should be given a contact number, someone to talk to speak to for advice. If you had gone through the system via a doctor, whether it's a primary care or GP or a hospital doctor, then there should be mechanisms there where you can call for help too. And once again, like with any other condition where the situation is dire, if you have someone that you feel is deteriorating rapidly, then 999 would be the way to go, or your nearest emergency department.
And Dr. Helmi, are there measures or improvements you hope the Ministry of Health will take to assist patients who are self-isolating at home, as well as, you know, the steps to efficiently transport patients to the hospitals when needed? You know, one point our previous guest, Ms. Yong, brought up earlier is how she wishes for a more centralized system to speed up the process.
I think you nailed it on the head in the sense that it would be better if there was a more centralized form of coordination. So there is some degree of overlap in function. And of course, there are some cases that will fall down between the gaps. Now, this is going to be very different depending on where you're at. So the situation in Lembah Pantai may be very different from the situation in Hulu Selangor. And it's going to be very difficult for us to be able to address each locality's problems in a very holistic fashion. So there should be, ideally, a coordinated force within each district that is linked to not just the public hospitals, but to private hospitals as well. Because what we should be seeing in the near future is a more coordinated attempt between the public and private sector when it comes to dealing with COVID-19 patients. There is definitely a lot that is being done well, but there's also a lot that is not being done well at the moment. And the key thing is to identify these cases, identify these weak links, and improve it, because ultimately, time is of essence. And being able to do things with a more efficient system in a way that is transparent as well, where we are able to link up both folks in the community as well as doctors in the hospitals, that is what I feel is the next step in terms of trying to improve things. So if there's anything that there are many things that we can do better if we had the resources, but we are not dealing with infinite resources here. So one key thing where I feel they should be able to put more effort into is actually the logistics, the telecommunication side of things. And this is where perhaps it is not just about MOH coming into play, but roping in other sectors of society as well. We could, for example, get Telecom or one of the telco companies to help when it comes to coordinating things, when it comes to providing a call center to address common questions. These are desperate times. These are times of emergency. And it only makes sense that we don't rely on just one particular ministry, but actually look into all the resources available in order to make things flow more smoothly.
Right. On that note, do you think there are other lessons you think the MOH, you know, do you think the MOH could draw from other countries who have directed low risk and asymptomatic patients to stay at home?
We can learn lessons from across the globe, but we always have to contextualize things because what's easily done or applicable to, say, Singapore is very different to DC, which is very different to Seattle. And we have to always contextualize things because the resources are not the same, nor are the socioeconomic issues on the ground. And there are some things that we can't change overnight. So, for example, we can't put in a centralized digital telemedicine system that gets all the hospitals on board in Klang Valley in a space of a few days. Whereas if you already had some infrastructure in place, if you had that kind of foresight to put things in place and you're in a much smaller area, like one small town, then of course that's more easily done. I think the key thing when it comes to people who are at home for quarantine, it's not necessarily what MOH has to learn, but I think what we as society have to learn and have to take on board. And that's really about communication. The last thing we want is for people to isolate themselves in terms of communication as well. So they are literally socially isolating themselves, not just physically, but actually being in contact with others. And what I think makes a huge difference is knowing that you have someone that you can speak to, knowing that someone you can ask for help, whether it's an official form of communication or whether it's an informal network. So we have situations on the ground where the Ketua Kampung, where people who are religious or community leaders, they have their own little WhatsApp groups. They keep an eye on each other. They are sending out food baskets. They are calling to find out if everyone's okay. They're arranging for community transport. So bearing in mind that the nation's resources are stretched, it's both humbling and also very motivating to see how people are coming together to help others in need. And I think that's what we should learn and what we should continue to encourage, the ability to reach out to each other, not just to help physically, but also bearing in mind that just calling and saying hello and checking on someone plays a lot in terms of strengthening and helping their mental health as well.
All right. Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Dr. Helmi. That was Dr. Helmi Hajimaidin, consultant respiratory physician, speaking to us about how COVID-19 positive patients who are asymptomatic or who have mild symptoms can best isolate themselves at home and monitor themselves.
Yep. And I like how Dr. Helmi, you know, brought up ways the community can come into the picture together at this time, right, to connect with people who are self-isolating at home. It goes back to, you know, kita jaga kita, and do not just look at ways the MOH can help address the situation, you know, all the time.
Yeah, I think that's right. But I also think that, you know, and this is especially after, you know, listening to Ms. Yong's experience, that perhaps there should be, you know, maybe some tweaks in the process and things like, you know, My Sejahtera, you know, to better streamline how patients are cared for remotely. Mm-hmm. On that note, the state health departments across the country do have separate hotlines that patients can reach out to if they can't get through to KKM or the CPRC. So you can find those details on their Facebook page.
Yep. And we've also been asking you whether you yourselves would feel comfortable isolating at home if you ever test positive for COVID-19. And so far, we've got some results that have come in. 66.8% of you say yes with proper support. 23.5% say no, admit me to hospital, while 9.6% say that they're unsure and that they need more info. And looking at, you know, some messages, I think there are also concerns about this, right? My Sir says, you know, for single parents who live alone, who will provide the food and essentials? Will KKM provide similar assistance? We've also got, you know, Zainal, who says, if you live alone, then perhaps it's okay to self-isolate at home. But if there are others in the house, then in my opinion, it's not acceptable. And we may be overlooking the risk of infecting others since there's no cure. And then Melon says, you know, absolutely not. My entire family is high risk due to different health conditions. You know, one simple mistake could, you know, really put them at risk.
Yeah, there's so many different factors that need to be taken into consideration, right? It's not just a one-size-fits-all kind of solution.
Yeah. And which is something we've been hearing, you know, just throughout this pandemic from all these different health experts,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah. And, yeah.
Yeah, and I you know, I don't blame the 9% of the people who have absolutely no idea what to do as well. Yeah. You know, because I think for a lot of times, I feel like I fall in that category, right? Okay, you can continue to share your thoughts with us by tweeting at us at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today's show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, the Bigger Picture crew, you can look us up on Facebook. We are BFM, the Bigger Picture. You can drop us a message there. If you missed any part of today's show, you can download the podcast by looking us up at bfm.my/thedailydigest. You can also find us on the BFM app. We are also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. And coming up at 3 p.m., Hez and I will be sticking around to talk about performing arts, performing arts scholarship by Infinity Academy, as well as the importance of performing arts, especially during the pandemic, right? And so we'll be speaking to Joanna Bessie, the head of Infinity Academy, and she's also the course director. Jade Lee, who's the founder of Artisans Haven, as well as Matthew Gunn, the CEO of Scholarships to You. So you stick around to that. They'll be after the 3 p.m. news. Once again, I'm Darshan Johan, alongside Julia Jacobs and Hezra Lashraf. You've been listening to The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.